You guys, Moms Don't Have Time to Read Books was nominated for a Webby Award, which is this really prestigious award that I am dying to win. And there's a People's Voice component, and you can vote and get me from number two, second place, to first place. But you have to vote. Please go to vote.webbys.com. Vote.webbys.com, but it's kind of complicated, so it might be easier just to go to zibbyowens.com or my Instagram at zibbyowens, where it'll always be in my stories and it's in one of those little circle highlights. Please, please, please vote. Voting ends April 18th and I'm in second place, so please vote for best individual episode, talk show, interview show. Thank you so much.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hi, this is Zibby Owens, and you're listening to the award-winning podcast, Moms Don't Have Time to Read Books. I'm also the host of Moms Don't Have Time to Lose Weight, and I'm the editor of the anthology, which you should run out and buy, called Moms Don't Have Time To, a Quarantine Anthology. All proceeds of that book go to COVID-19 vaccine research. And I'm the editor-in-chief of Moms Don't Have Time to Write, a new publication on Medium, and we're accepting submissions, so please send your personal essays there. And if all that isn't enough, you can follow me on Instagram at Zibby Owens, and my website is zibbyowens.com. Okay, now back to this amazing podcast. YZ Chin is the author of Edge Case. She also wrote Though I Get Home, which won the Louise Merriweather First Book Prize and the Asian Pacific American Award for Literature honor title. Her writing has been published in Harvard Review, Gulf Coast, Some Such Stories, Electric Literature, Lit Hub, and elsewhere. Born and raised in Malaysia, she now lives in New York, where she works as a software engineer. Welcome, YZ. Thank you for coming on Moms Don't Have Time to Read Books to discuss Edge Case, especially as a mom to a nine-month-old baby. So thank you even more so.
Definitely relate hard. Thanks for having me.
Okay, Edge Case, congratulations on this beautiful novel.
Thank you.
Would you mind telling listeners what it's about?
Yeah, so it's a story told in first person by a quote-unquote so-called skilled worker immigrant. Her name is Edwina. She is from Malaysia and she works for a tech startup in New York City. She lives with her husband, who is also a, you know, similar shoes, a skilled worker immigrant. They are both on work visas that are sort of rapidly expiring, and they will require green card sponsorship soon. So at this important juncture in their lives, Marlon deserts their marriage, essentially. He walks out, he disappears on Edwina. So the story is Edwina telling a would-be therapist about her experiences, how she got here, what her current situation is, like what her future plans might be as she sort of searches frantically for Marlon.
I love how Edwina and Marlon later on said they used to compete for like who would be sponsored first from their different jobs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's maybe the competition might be like more one-sided. Maybe it's more Edwina thinking because she has like, maybe she has a complex, right? She has a chip on her shoulder because she used to study literature. So she's entering the tech world a little bit through unconventional path, whereas Marlon is your more traditional engineering student, now a software engineer. So maybe she feels like she has to prove herself a little bit and not be, quote unquote, a green card wife, perhaps.
So part of this book is sort of the search for Marlin until she, you know, I won't give anything away. And I love how you include these lists and then kind of check them off as you go. I mean, her, what, you know, the character, but even from a structural point, you're like going through it, like, okay, crossing this one off. Okay, now we're going crossing the next one off and trying to figure out like why he's left. And then all of the flashbacks of their lives really and how they got there, even how you intersperse the chapters and, you know, today, and 2 days from now and back, you know, I just love that when it's all mixed up in timeline, you know.
Yeah.
So what made you write the book and how did you come up with the form and everything like that?
Mm-hmm. Maybe I'll answer the second question first, okay, because I was nodding along as you said that. I'm so glad you like it. That, so like many novels, this one went through a lot of drafts and the structure sort of crystallized after a lot of discussion with my really great editor, Sarah Birmingham. So she's responsible, I think, for a lot of the brilliant ideas for how to organize the story. But I think from the start, I think there's like, you can sort of see a hint of the structure sort of taking the form of these past life stories. I know we haven't talked about that yet, but Edwina's mother, who lives in Malaysia, really believes in past life and is, I don't know if this is the right way to say, she's like a connoisseur of past life stories. So because there's this really powerful force behind this idea, right? Like that everything, who you are now, every action you're taking now can be attributed to something that happened in the past, where there's a reason for everything that's happening now for your actions. So this past influencing the present, that's sort of, I think, mirrors the structure a little bit, like, oh, here's what, how we met, here's what happened at this point in the past, and that's why I'm here now telling you about this, you know, this latest event, this sort of upheaval in my life. Yeah, so that's the structure. And I think, yeah, it does help feed into, like, show you how maybe sort of desperate Edwina is for a narrative to how did my life get to this place? Why am I here? And then how I came to write this book, I think there are so many entry points into the book. It's sort of difficult to like sort of talk about neatly, but I think one factor is that I tell this anecdote a bunch, but so I moved to New York City in my 20s and I was standing on a street corner, like a dark street corner, trying to get a cab home. I was living in Manhattan at that point and it was sort of dark. So then I stuck my arm out, yellow cab sort of slowed down near me. The driver poked his head, looked at me, and then said, oh, I'm not going to Queens, and just sped off.
Oh my gosh. Like,
there's a lot of context wrapped up in this, you know, very quick 2-second encounter. And not everyone might know, like, why did the driver say that? You know, what is it about Queens? But yeah, so a lot of Asians live in Queens. Anyway, so I later realized sort of disturbingly that I understood everything about this encounter instantly. And that sort of made me realize that I'd been internalizing a lot of, you know, stereotypes and tropes and, you know, to just like potentially like racist ideas about how I'm supposed to be seen, how I'm supposed to move through New York City, through the United States as a whole. And I hadn't even realized that, you know, all these ideas had been inside me. But yeah, I actually understand a lot of my supposed place in this new country because I am from Malaysia. Although the story is not autobiographical. Anyway, yeah, so that's one of the things that I sort of thought about on and off over the years. And that's, I think, one germ for the novel.
And I'm assuming it must have really come about when you were trying to cut into some sort of spaghetti squash or, you know, butternut squash or something, because I love, you should like brand the type of knife that is in this book, the knife for difficult fruit or whatever, fruits and vegetables, because it is so true. When I think about how many times things have been like slipping off the table and like watermelons and like, it's so hard to cut those things. So anyway.
Yeah. Yeah. It's tough, but in Malaysia, people eat a lot of durian. And I think, I don't know, in every household, there's like at least one expert durian hacker. I'm not that person in my family. Yeah. But yeah, I think, you know, you're used to the idea, I think, growing up that, wow, there's this delicious fruit that may hurt you and it's very hard to cut open.
Yes.
Yeah.
A metaphor for life, right? There's some... You can take this really far and deep, but I'll leave it at that.
Yeah, that's the reason they call it Fruits of Your Labor.
Exactly, exactly. There you go. So you also really write well about the, I would say, like the tenuous state of our minds, right? And what is mental health? Like, when are you super clear about, like, when can you trust somebody else's thoughts and feelings? When they lose touch with reality, how do you handle that? Like, how do you reconcile, like, especially your innermost relationship when, like, someone is living in more of a spiritual world or, you know, has different conceptions and how that impacts the relationship in different ways. So tell me a little more about that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think, yeah, that's what Edwina struggles with most. And I think that's the thorniest part of the narrative for Edwina. So there's this snippet in the book that sort of reflects how maybe not well accepted or well socialized mental health services is in the small town that Edwina grows up in. And she has a hard time finding mental health support. And I think that might be true also for many Asian Americans. There's potentially stigma in seeking therapy still. I think we've obviously come a long way, but that has been true in the past. So that's something that she bumps up against, which is the idea of seeking therapy, but also the mental health in different forms, right? Like her mother believes in past lives, and that's like a completely different framework for discussing, you know, explanations or for your behaviors and how to adapt them. So like what happens when Edwina might not necessarily agree with either framework, you know, the like behavioral talk therapy. Maybe she doesn't really believe in that, or maybe she hasn't seen that as an option, but she also can't really accept this other framework her mother presents. And there's this complicating factor of where on green card applications, they ask applicants about mental health statuses. So Edwina feels this like paranoia that she cannot engage in. She has to seem really normal first of all. And then she cannot risk, you know, having a record like where she like officially goes see a therapist. Like she's just like consumed by all these paranoid worries. So mental health is her biggest struggle. And that's why she sort of ends up talking to this bootleg therapist
yes.
in the novel, which like, seems really sketchy. And I hope sort of suffuses a sense of precarity, like gently in the background.
Yes. Like who is she really talking to anyway? You know?
Right. Yeah.
Swipe right on a therapist. And you're like, I'm a therapist in training. I mean, I could say that.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Actually, you end up with a lot of great stories that way, I have to say. If you're looking for a story idea.
Oh, gosh. Oh, yeah. Don't tempt me.
Okay. I mean, you know, in exchange for story ideas, use me as your therapist. I don't know.
Yeah.
There's a new business model out there, maybe.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You also, you did a great job also of like showing what it's like for a woman in a male dominated tech environment and what that's like with sort of the culture and how you even point out like individually, maybe these guys would be great, but like the culture of them all together. And I think we all mm-hmm. have been in situations with like this sort of frat boy culture where you're like one or you're in a group and the group dynamic sort of overtakes the will of each individual. And so Edwina like faces that every day in her work life. Mm. Tell me where that came from and everything.
No, exactly. I think you're spot on with the group dynamics part. It's structural, right? It's not like people say one bad apple or things like that. It's not, it's like the lack of accountability, perhaps. Like obviously they're good people, like you said, and individually they can be very decent, but it's the, yeah. So yeah. Anyway, where this came from, I think, you know, it's not, I don't think I'm like breaking new ground here. I think there have been many news reports about, yeah, like Susan Fowler and Uber. There's lots of material to mine, but I did work in a couple of startups, and those startups were sort of like dominantly male. And yeah, I've had some sketchy encounters as well. I had a coworker once joke about putting date rape drugs in my coffee. Yeah, I'm laughing nervously. I'm not laughing.
I understand.
Yeah, so Edwina's experiences aren't my direct experiences, but I think I can obviously very well relate to what happens in the book. It's like no stretch of imagination to, you know, sort of describe what she goes through. But Also, yeah, so to follow up to my personal experience there, the story is my manager at the time was very supportive. I was very sympathetic. So yeah, there are definitely ways to address issues well. Unfortunately, in Edwina's company, she doesn't have that support, but yeah.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, grown-ups, the Cat in the Hat cast is a new podcast from Wondery, perfect for the whole family. Join the Cat in the Hat and your favorite Dr. Seuss characters as they get whisked away on a new adventure every week. Fish dreams of creating his very own polite and quiet podcast. That is, until he gets a surprise visit to his fishbowl podcast studio from the Cat in the Hat himself, and it becomes very clear that the cat has other plans for the podcast, and those plans are the opposite of quiet. The cat may be disruptive, but it turns out he's also a great help to get Fish out of all kinds of predicaments. Bursting with music, silliness, and rhymes, the Cat in the Hat cast encourages us all to find fun that is funny in every episode. So sing along to new favorite songs, try your luck at Titanic tongue twisters, have some fun with wondrous wordplay, and most importantly, bring your family along for all of the adventures in the Cat in the Hat cast. Follow the Cat in the Hat cast on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen to the Cat in the Hat cast ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or Wondery Kids Plus in Apple Podcasts. Today's episode has been sponsored by Jay McLaughlin. Jay McLaughlin is a timeless lifestyle brand with incredible style and a spirit of connection. I am obsessed with Jay McLaughlin and have been so honored that they are sponsoring my Zibbyverse tour. It just so happens that the tour goes to so many communities and areas of the country that have Jay McLaughlin stores. And I love that the brand is philanthropic through Jay McLaughlin's local and loyal programming. Host store events to give back to organizations that are meaningful to Jay McLaughlin's local communities. I also love the fact that the clothes are just so chic. They make me feel polished and modern. And the best part is that most of the line comes in fabrics that don't wrinkle. I especially love the dresses, the cashmere sweaters, the other sweaters. You'll see them all over my Instagram. I typically tag at Jay McLaughlin. And so you can check it out. It is absolutely one of my favorite brands, and I am over the moon excited to be working with them. In fact, I want to share the love with all of you. Jay McLaughlin is giving 20% off new customers and listeners of my podcast with special code ZIBBY20. Capital ZIBBY 20. That's 20% off for new customers and listeners of the podcast with special code capital Z Zibby 20. Take advantage of it today. My favorites are this white, open, long cashmere sweater that I've been wearing on every flight that I've taken on this tour. I have a blue with light blue horizontal striped sweater, several dresses I even wore on Good Morning America. Check it out, Jay McLaughlin. Thanks so much.
Wow. Yeah, so that's where all of that came from.
I feel like you should also do something with the branding of the suitcase in this book. You know, I feel like the suitcase is like such a visual, maybe like, I don't know, on your paperback, you have to, I don't know. I felt like, you know, especially when like, well, I don't want to give anything, but you know, at different times, like it has different absences from different places and whatever. And I don't know, you could just so see it. Like I wanted to know, like, where is the suitcase at the end of the book? Like, where does it end? Anyway.
Yeah. There are a lot of branding ideas.
Yeah.
Huh?
A lot of branding. Okay, I'll stop. This is like, I have no, I should. I have fun thinking about this stuff. So.
Gears turning. I should probably do something with them.
No, I just, I find that super fun. So why did you write this book?
I wrote it for many reasons. I think one major one is just because I left Malaysia when I was 19. Came to the United States when I was 19, and I would have these regular weekly, you know, Skype calls with my family. And I think it's sort of distressing to realize that you're changing, you know, you can sort of see yourself changing in the eyes of the people closest to you, and you might not like the way that you're changing. You might realize that being in a new place, having to learn your new place, and these rules and regulations that might apply to you as an immigrant might feel, feel like they're pressuring your personality. So I think there's rare situations where an individual, especially minorities everywhere in the world, you can realize that you are being changed by systemic forces, maybe into someone that you don't really want to be, but you feel like you have to be in order to, whatever, get a better job or get that visa, things like that. And so, yeah, you start to maybe see your identity as transactional almost. So I think that's a very interesting state of mind. And I wanted to capture that instability that, sort of knowing and yet not wanting to know, but then painfully also understanding that you are in the process of being transformed.
That was a beautiful answer. Okay. And why have you always written? What made you write a novel at all? Where did this come from? Did you write as a little kid? Tell me about the journey here.
Yeah. So my mom worked in an insurance office, and she would sometimes take me to work, and just to let me occupy myself, she would put me down in front of a typewriter. Yeah, back then typewriters still existed, and I would just go at it. So I guess it started off as me pretending to work, trying to fit in with all the adults around me. I don't know, but stories I think have always been important for me. Just socially awkward, like many authors, many writers and readers, socially awkward. Yeah. Hard to make friends, notes in book. Yeah. And then when I came to the United States, I studied computer science, but I also had the opportunity to double major in creative writing. I actually started off in poetry. So yeah, took a few turns and here I am with a novel somehow. It's a little hard to believe.
Well, that's amazing. Do you know, I just heard last night from a new friend of mine that there's a way to make friends on Bumble. Did you know this?
No.
It's not just for dating. There's a BFF Bumble or something like that. And you can put in the things you're interested in and swipe on friends. And she's made some good friends this way. Not sketchy at all. Real highly accomplished women who have similar interests. And I don't know. I found that fascinating.
Yeah, actually, yeah. I did know you can say on dating sites, you can say, I'm just looking for friends. But I never heard of someone using that earnestly and actually having great results. So that's really good for her.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Yeah.
But anyway, sorry, that was a totally random point, but just on your making friends comment.
That's great.
So how long did it take you to write? Where did you do it? I'm looking in your room or something. Were you sitting on the bed there, typing away? Tell me about it.
Yeah. So I think the very first lines of the novel were written in 2017, and I think from the beginning, the past life stories were a big part of the novel. I think I started off with a much bigger focus on the past life stories and then slowly iterated through working with my agent, working with early readers, getting a sense of, what works, what doesn't. So what is it now? 2021. I guess it's been 4 years. Yeah, I went through many drafts and I wrote it. So I actually published a book before the novel. It's a fiction collection called Though I Get Home. I wrote that while I was working full-time due to visa requirements. So yeah, as part of having a visa, I'm required to work 40 hours a week at least. So that book came out in 2018. And that was also the year that I got my green card, which allowed me to work my day job part-time instead of full-time. So once I switched to part-time, I found that, I had some ambition in me to write a novel, because I thought to myself, okay, now I have more time to dedicate to writing. I want to write a novel. I want to tackle character voice. I want to write a unique voice. I want to write, something challenging. Yeah. So then that's where I usually write at a kitchen table. Yeah. Nothing super glamorous.
And it rarely is, but I was interested. And how about now? Are you working on something new?
In my head. Yeah. So writing absolutely in my head. It's a little hard with almost 9 months old, but I'm thinking up, plot events, thinking up a line here, a line there, sort of crisscrossing words all in my head. And then when I get a chance, when baby's taking a nap, for example, I'll just sort of scramble to the laptop and type stuff down. But yeah, one day, maybe I'll be someone who writes longhand on beautiful paper, but not right now.
Yeah, well, send me pictures of that if you get to that. I'll take some pictures. Yeah. Do you have any advice for aspiring authors?
Yeah, I would say, if life, I don't want to say life gets in the way because that doesn't sound right. So yeah, if there are life circumstances that prevent you from, like I said, sitting down writing for uninterrupted stretches of time, I think it's totally doable and it still counts as writing to write in your head. I think thinking about the work, engaging with the work mentally as you go about, go interacting with the world and the debris of your life almost. I think that counts as writing, and it's every bit of it is valuable. I like to look at Emily Dickinson's envelope poems sometimes. So I went to an exhibition at the Morgan, I believe it was, and did an exhibition of Emily Dickinson's poems that she wrote just on the triangular flap of envelopes. Mm-hmm. And they literally shape her lines because of the constraint. And so, I found that very moving. She's probably going about doing chores, taking an envelope out of her pocket, writing a line here, a line there, sweeping. And yeah, just I really like how how entirely part of the fabric of her life her art is. And I'm striving to do the same and not feel like, taking care of a baby is taking me away from writing. It's not. It's all art. It's all part of it.
Let's just keep saying that to ourselves. I'm going to keep saying that to myself too with my kids. I'm like, no. I do feel like, I write a ton of essays. Like that's my preferred sort of genre. And so I can always tell when the first kind of seed flies in and I lodges in there, and then more seeds attract until they're enough that I'm ready for them to become like a plant, and then I write it out. I mean, that sounds ridiculous. Mm-hmm.
I love it.
You need all the inputs before it's ready to come out again. So
you can't
just be sitting there because you won't get inputs from doing nothing.
Yeah. And sometimes it's like consolation, right? A star here, an idea here, an idea there, and they don't seem connected. And then you see the connection. Yeah. No, it's great.
Totally. I buy that. I totally agree. All right. Awesome. Well, thank you so much. Oh, wait. Advice to aspiring authors. More advice. Anything you have?
More advice. Yeah. I would say, I think advice is tricky because not everything works for everyone. So, I feel read as many advice as you can and take what works for you. But I would say at least the very first draft or first couple of drafts, write for yourself. Mm-hmm. I mean, just don't worry about how, a reader might perceive it, how an agent might perceive it. Just write for yourself. And then in later drafts, I think that's when you maybe try to approach it with, okay, how would someone not at all engaged who hasn't been obsessing over this material like I have for the past, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 years? How would someone like that approach this? I think in the very later stages is when you should bring in the outside perspective. But the very first draft, it should be just for you, and you shouldn't at all have a reader in your mind.
I was so nervous starting the draft for my memoir that once I had sold it, that I put in all capital letters, "No one will see this but you."
Yeah.
And then I was okay, now I can start. And then I was fine. But hurdle.
Yeah. Yeah. It's definitely, it allows, I don't know, you have to give yourself room to make mistakes or go where even you don't think you want to go. I think I like to tell myself, and I don't know if this advice works for everyone, but I like to say, instead of writing just what you know, write what you know, but also write what you don't want to know. What are you afraid of knowing? What do you find yourself sort of mentally, skidding about? What are you racing past? What are you afraid to confront? Yeah.
Awesome. All right.
Hope that helps.
It helps. It all helps. Okay. Well, YZ, this was so interesting. And thank you for coming on. Thanks for this fantastic novel filled with, the tech startup, the relationship at home, the abandonment, the search, all of it. You have a lot of great elements, friendship, family, you got it all in there. So about.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate it. Right. And I hope reading and writing goes smoothly.
Thank you so much. Good luck with, you know, the whole launch time and everything. So
great. Okay. Thank you.
All right. Take care. Bye.
Take care. Bye.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Moms Don't Have Time to Read Books. Don't forget to follow me on Instagram at Zibby Owens and at Moms Don't Have Time to Read Books. Also sign up for my newsletter at ZibbyOwens.com and sign up for my virtual book club and meet lots of authors on Zoom every other week. Thanks so much to Steve and Ryan at Texture Sound for the sound editing. And thank you to Morning Moon Productions for providing this fantastic intro and outro music.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.